It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When Kalpana Biswas, a filmmaker and board chairperson of Women in Film and Media Pittsburgh, decided to make a film about women and children in Afghanistan, she appealed to journalists in the Pittsburgh area for advice on how to prepare. Through her preparation for that project, she gathered some inspiring stories and insight from local journalists who have developed careers on the front lines of war. And now, next week, she's bringing some of those journalists together for a panel discussion called War Reporting: Filmmakers and Journalists on the Realities of War. It will take place next Thursday, October 24th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Carnegie Library Lecture Hall in Oakland. Kalpana Biswas joins us now in Studio A, along with a couple of these Pittsburgh journalists. Kalpana Biswas, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Pittsburgh Tribune Review photojournalist Justin Merriman, who has been embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan and has covered the Egyptian Revolution. Justin Merriman, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Linda Schuster is a former staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal who covered Central and South America, Mexico, and the Middle East. Later, she was South Africa bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. Linda Schuster, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
If you have a comment or question for our guests, call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. You can email us at ESSPGH at WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Kalpana, let's begin by talking about the documentary project that you were doing in Afghanistan. You experienced your own dangerous situations there. Explain what happened after you were passed off as an Indian journalist, only to have people suspicious about you being a Pakistani spy.
Yes, this was a really interesting situation. I was in Kandahar, which is really the spiritual home of the Taliban, and I decided that I found a marketplace at the crossroads in Kandahar. You know, roads leading east, west, north, and south. Called Char Sous, and I was filming out there. My friends had put me in this black burqa, and I had my camera. I was passed off as this Indian TV anchor who was out there to film the people, the marketplace. And that kind of worked for a while. Most people out there seemed to have a pretty positive reaction to India. They thought India was a friend. Lots of smiles, and all right, but some of the shopkeepers started talking to me in Urdu, and I responded. And after a while, though, there was this tension building up. People thought that, you know, maybe my story wasn't quite the right story. And then somebody said that they had heard about suicide bombers who had come across to Kandahar from Pakistan. And then the rumor started that maybe I was a Pakistani spy, and I was actually filming this area to see where we could plant bombs.
Why all of a sudden was the suspicion falling on you?
I think there's this hypervigilance around there. I looked a little odd as a woman who was filming. I had a couple of people around me who were helping me with my filming. I think they are now so vigilant. It's almost a question of, you know, where is the danger? And I was clearly somebody who didn't belong there. I was this woman who was very confidently filming. They could see that I was an outsider. I was talking Urdu. And there was something in all of this that frightened people, I think. They're taught to be afraid there because that's the only security they have.
So what ended up happening?
I was able to film a little bit longer. I was in the crossroads, actually standing on the traffic circle, and the traffic police stood on the side to let me film the traffic and in the crossroads. But after a while, I found a lot of policemen with their guns sort of coming closer, and they told me that I had to leave right away. This was about 10 minutes number of my reporter friends had said, don't stay for more than about 10 minutes and learn to recognize the signs that the moment people get a little bit restless, it means that you have to get out of there. And that's when I decided we had to leave. So we called our car and just left.
You had to really want to do this project. What made you want to do this?
I think I've been interested in this whole, the war situation, the conflict situation. After 9/11, most people have gotten interested in Afghanistan, which was and other countries that are in the middle of war. And I've also been interested in
maybe even before then, with the Soviets being there.
Right. And I've also been interested in this whole story of women. Women who I've heard in South Africa and Liberia and places like that, where women have come forward when it almost seemed like there was no hope, the country was just falling apart, that women came forward and to try and stabilize their societies. And I thought this was a story that I wanted to talk about. I serendipitously, I met a couple of filmmakers from Afghanistan, women filmmakers who were making incredible films with just handheld video cameras. They were going in to document the women who were being persecuted at home. They were being killed. They were being burnt. Stories of incredible heroism as well. And I just thought these are young women who've sort of come out of the shadows after the Taliban. They're very young. They're going back with almost no equipment, trying to tell their stories so that some reform can come about in their societies. And there seemed to be this incredible strength and resilience that I wanted to capture. I wanted to see what it was. What was the strength that kept these women going after 30 years of war? And whether there was a model in that that could be sort of codified, could be talked about, could be set up as a model for the way women can actually stabilize society. And so when I got a chance to go to Afghanistan with an Afghan-American woman, Rangina Hamidi, who has a co-op that she started with war widows and people who are who've been thrown out of their homes, these women, she's got them together to embroider. It's a traditional embroidery of Afghanistan, of Kandahar, actually. It's called kamak. And she gets them to embroider pieces, and then she sells them to international markets in the U.S., for instance, at Santa Fe, the folk art international market, things like that. And I thought there was this incredible sense of a commitment to the country that somehow, if women can be educated, if women can be taught how to work, how to earn a living, maybe there's going to be a trickle-down effect of having them having their communities accept them, having them take more decisions in what happens to their girls, what happens to their boys. Can the girls be educated? Can they be not married off very young?
It was really a story about women and children in Afghanistan in a war zone that is and in a place that's been at war for so many years and with different entities involved. And had you done any documentary work in areas of conflict before?
No. I had done documentaries about women who are really, heroes in themselves.
But you hadn't been in a war zone.
I had not been in a war zone.
So thus you went to these other folks who had to get their advice. And what kinds of advice were you given on what to expect, as particularly as a woman filmmaker? And what was the reality for you once you got to Afghanistan?
Well, once I met some of these people, Linda, Justin, a whole Carmen Gentile, a whole bunch of reporters, too long a list to name, who had been in places like that and who had personal experiences. From them, I got the nitty-gritties of what to expect. From other people, analysts I met, including former Ambassador Ron Newman, for instance, who gave me a wider perspective, a macro perspective of, what the structures were like that I could expect and in which the women function. But from reporters like these, like Justin, like Linda, I got this the nitty-gritties of, what to wear, what are the danger signals, what to carry when I'm on my own over there, how do I go through filming without really endangering myself. Where should I sit once I enter a room with my back to the wall?
And that really is the question, is for any reporter, any photojournalist in a war zone or in an area where there's a lot of tension, is how not to put yourself in danger. Let's talk with a couple of the people who are here today with you to share their stories of working as journalists in war zones and areas of conflict. Justin Merriman, you are a photojournalist for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. How did you get into reporting on the front lines?
Wow. You know, for me, I was at Shanksville on 9/11 in the crash of Flight 93. I was a young photographer at one of the Trib's papers, the Valley News Dispatch, and I was covering that event. And that kind of thrust me into this story that I didn't even realize at the time that I was being thrust into, but this story of what was happening in our world and the effects of 9/11. And before I knew it, some years passed, but I was moved down to the Pittsburgh Trib. And, you know, my first assignment actually was in India, and I was covering the 50th anniversary of the Salk polio vaccine. And my first adventure into kind of conflict areas was Pakistan. And I went to Pakistan right after Benazir Bhutto was assassinated and kind of covered what was happening there, which led me into Afghanistan. There was no real training or anything like that. I mean, you learn a lot of this as you go.
So you're going off to Pakistan where there was a lot of political conflict, which of course led to the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, which was late in 2007, and eventually you end up in Afghanistan and Iraq, and you're saying you had no particular training for how to do your job in these areas?
I don't know that there is any real, you know, training you can take to get to learn to work in these environments. I think that, you know, I did a lot of the same things that Kalpana did. I spoke to people who have been there and done this work. I had a close personal friend, Chris Hondros, was a photographer with Getty Images, who unfortunately was killed in Libya. But, you know, he helped guide me with some suggestions and advice. And it's one of those things I have it in me. I think I'm good at this type of work. I'm good in these environments. I have a natural curiosity, and I also have an understanding of dangers and risks and know when to step back and when to step forward. You learn as you go, but when you work in these environments, you have to be aware that if you make a mistake, the consequences can be very dire and very serious. So you try to learn and not make mistakes as best you can.
Linda Schuster, you wanted to be a foreign correspondent but didn't want to cover war. How did that work out for you?
Well, I was hired by the journal right out of university and told
them, Wall Street Journal.
Yes, and told them that I was only interested in foreign reporting. And so they immediately sent me to their Dallas bureau, which I guess for a New Yorker is a foreign bureau. But and then I got very lucky because for some reason Dallas covered Central America at the time. This was in the early 80s. And that position opened up, and because no one else in the bureau wanted it, because to them the plum assignments were the business assignments. And so I sort of fell into that and then just kept getting posted to situations of conflict after that.
So you were going to places like Nicaragua?
Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala. During when the Contra war was going on, and when there was a civil war going on in El Salvador, and we had direct American involvement in that.
What is it like for a woman? Do women tend to receive? And I'm sure it depends on where you go, but is there more hospitality or hostility towards you, or does it just depend on the situation?
Well, I always found that being a woman was an advantage, actually, because most of the conflicts that I covered, all the conflicts I covered were in the developing world. And these are very traditional societies which generally accord women tremendous hospitality and kindness. And so I could always get interviews that my male counterparts couldn't. So I could get my foot in the door. Once I got in the door, it was a question of trying to get them to take me seriously because I was only a woman.
Right. So you're saying you could get the interview, but then once you were sitting down and talking with them, were they more or less likely to be forthcoming based on the fact that you are a female?
Well, if I were sitting there with a male counterpart, they would probably be less forthcoming. But so then the quality of your journalistic skills come into play, and that will determine how much information you can actually get.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and this is 90.5 WESA. My guests are documentary filmmaker Kalpana Biswas. Also with us is Pittsburgh Tribune Review photojournalist Justin Merriman, who has been embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan and covered the Egyptian Revolution, and Linda Schuster, former staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal, who later worked as the South Africa bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. We're talking about journalists working in war zones, and we will continue our conversation and take your calls at 412-246-2002. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about a panel that is going to get together next week here in Pittsburgh for a discussion called War Reporting, Filmmakers and Journalists on the Realities of War. It's taking place next Thursday, October 24th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Carnegie Library Lecture Hall in Oakland. And we are being joined by Kalpana Biswas, who is the person behind this particular panel discussion. She is a filmmaker and board chairman of Women in Film and Media, who went to Afghanistan to make a film, talk to some of her fellow journalists from this area who have worked in war zones, and decided that their stories were worth repeating before an audience. And we've invited some of them to be with us here today on the program, along with Kalpana Biswas. We have the reporter or the photojournalist from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, Justin Merriman, who has been embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan and has covered the Egyptian Revolution. Linda Schuster is also with us. She is a former staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal, who covered Central and South America, Mexico, and the Middle East. Later, she was the South Africa bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. Linda, we were talking to you before the break, and I want to go back to you to talk about covering Beirut in the late 1980s. You were accidentally fired upon. What happened?
Well, this was a time – this was during the Lebanese Civil War, and this was after the American Marines had been blown up in their barracks. I think 243 U.S. Marines were killed. And at that time, we had U.S. pilot was shot down over Syria. And I think the Reverend Jesse Jackson went to Syria to try to negotiate his release. But in the meantime, we had the U.S. Warship, the New Jersey, in the port of Beirut. And I was up in the Shouf Mountains doing a story up there. And the New Jersey decided to fire in that direction, which is over towards Syria, in an attempt to persuade the Syrians to release the pilot. And I just happened to be there. And those 16-inch guns can really make a very big noise and shoot some deadly ammunition your way.
And there you were.
There I was. And there was no way I could tell them, hey, there's an American citizen up here.
And that's just one of the hazards of the job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was almost minor compared with sort of the other things that you had to put up with in Beirut and in Lebanon.
Justin Merriman, what kind of danger have you found yourself in? What's the most dangerous situation that you've ever been involved in?
Boy. Well, you know, first of all, let me say that, you know, you when you go into these environments, you expect to be in danger. And it's something that kind of comes with the job, and you have to recognize it and understand that if you want to do this type of work, you're going to be in situations where, you know, you're at risk. In Afghanistan, I drove over a landmine. It went off underneath my seat, and luckily it didn't explode. So there was some type of malfunction in it. It was a 12-pound pressure plate landmine. And had that went off, I wouldn't be standing here right now. In Iraq, moments after I walked away, a mortar fell and killed a female soldier where I was standing. I've survived some issues on helicopters, which we had to make some hard landings, which otherwise may be called crashes. But the military calls them hard landings. A helicopter was on fire, and we had to land and have it repaired before we got back on the same helicopter and headed out.
Okay, so all right, so you got out of the helicopter after the hard landing, and then it's like we got to get back in and go.
Got to go back to where you're going.
How do you do that? What allows you not only just to get back into that helicopter in that situation, but just, you know, because you go back and forth from these war zones. What is there any point where you are back in the United States, say, in a moment of cool reflection, saying, my God, I can't believe when I drove over the landmine, for example, and it didn't go off. I'm so lucky to be alive. What allows you to return to that?
I don't know. I don't think much about it when I come back. I don't think about those
But you
things.
Must at some point. At some point, there must be a moment where you have time to think and you go and the realization hits you that I'm lucky to be alive.
Well, you have to realize that every day when you wake up and you go to work, when you're in these environments, you know that something like that could happen. And you have to pull yourself up and go, I'm going in. And it's a moment where you stand there and you go, okay, I'm back here, but there's the action, and you got to go, okay, I'm here to do this, and you step forward and you go into it. I was in a pretty serious firefight in Afghanistan where we knew we were going into an ambush, and we were ambushed. When I got out of the Humvee, we were taking heavy fire, and I took cover behind a wall with the sergeant that I was with. And, you know, I survived this firefight, and it was, you know, they ended up killing a Taliban fighter who they worked tirelessly to save after they had shot him in this firefight, and they captured a few other Taliban fighters. But, you know, this was the day after I ran over the landmine. I was in this firefight, and then the next day, and this is towards the end of my trip. So you know you're pushing it. You've already been there over a month in country. Every day you're pushing it. You know, I go through the firefight. I go back to the base that night, and I sleep. And the next day, we go out on another mission, and you have to go, okay, I got one more day left, but I'm really pushing it. Two things have happened in the last 2 days. What could happen now? But you're there to do this job, and you realize that risk, and you pull yourself up, and you strap that camera over your shoulders, and you walk into it, and that's what you have to do.
And a lot of what you must be doing, Linda, you wanted to make a point.
I just want to say that Justin and I were talking before. I think that war photographers are a special breed. There is a sort of taboo amongst print journalists that you never go into a firefight with a photographer because those guys are crazy. They're the ones who are heading directly into it when you want to step back and be able to observe.
Well, Justin, I'm curious when you come back to the United States, you're here now, and how do you readjust after, you know, running around doing the things that you do when you're in Iraq or Afghanistan? And you're operating on, you know, the adrenaline is flowing, which I'm guessing is a big part of what motivates you, is just the rush you get from doing your job. So then you're here in the United States for, say, 2 or 3 months, and, you know, there's nothing like that here. So what is that like for you?
It is difficult. You know, it's difficult for me to you know, it's not so much the dangers and the risks while I'm there that when I come back here, those don't exist. They can't exist here in places. I have kind of a unique experience at the Pittsburgh Tribune-Review. I'm fortunate that our paper, you know, allows us to do these important stories. But I also have a unique experience that I come back from those stories and I work domestically and I work here in Pittsburgh. And I like the difference of the two. It is a difficult adjustment to come back. And you know, I'll admit to you guys here, and I, you know, my close friends know this. Most of my colleagues don't. But I have been diagnosed with PTSD. And it's not necessarily from what I've seen or what's happened around me, but really what it is the running. It's such a high rate of adrenaline, mm-hmm. and you're straining your mental abilities, and you're under stress constantly. And you come back and to kind of get out of that mindset where you're running at a lower level, but your body still wants to run at that high level. So it's hard to kind of get back to what is normal. How should I be feeling? Should I be seeking out adventure, or should I, you know? Is it okay to just sit and read a book in quiet or something like that? So it's a struggle, but it's for me as a photographer, it's a struggle to make work that is as, you know, wide read or as important as the images I make in these environments.
We're talking with reporters who are working in war zones, and you just heard from Justin Merriman, who is a Pittsburgh Tribune Review photojournalist and who has been embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan, covered the Egyptian Revolution. We'll get to some stories about that for sure before we wrap this up, Justin. And also Linda Schuster, former staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal, who covered Central and South America, Mexico, and the Middle East. And later she was South Africa bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. And the woman who has brought these reporters together, among others, to tell their stories is also with us in studio. She is making a documentary, Kalpana Biswas, a filmmaker and board chairperson of Women in Film and Media, Pittsburgh, who made a film about women and children in Afghanistan. And you wanted to jump in and make a point. Kalpana.
I just wanted to say that it's this whole issue of why people go into war. It is a job, I guess, but I think, as Justin was saying, that's one aspect of it. But it almost seems when you're out there that there's such an important story to tell, this whole story of life and death. I mean, it's absolutely down to its elemental state. I mean, you have people who are struggling, fighting to live or fighting to die, you know, for reasons that are so heroic in many ways. It just seems like an incredibly compelling story to tell others. And I would think that that's one of the reasons why people go into war.
Yeah, Justin.
I agree with you completely. And you made an important point. You know, what you made me think of something that, yes, people go into these environments and I'm always asked, you know, what were the dangers I faced and what happened to me and all this. But what really is there, and I think, you know, the work that Kalpana did in Afghanistan, you know, shows this, is it's not about us that go in there and face these dangers. It's about the people who live with these dangers day in and day out. This is their world. This is their home. And they can't escape it. And, you know, suicide bombings and attacks are something that they see every day. And for me to have to face that on occasion to tell these stories and shed light to these people, you know, I take that responsibility very seriously. And I accept the risks to do that for these people.
Linda.
Yeah, and the downside of it, and I'm sure that both of both Kalpana and Justin have felt this, is that you go into these situations, they're incredibly intense. You share this time with people who are living under unimaginable circumstances. You get their stories, you cry with them, you eat with them, you talk with them. But at the end of the day, you have your little American passport and you're going to get on that plane and you're going to go home. And there was a part of me, at least, and I'm sure that this has been felt by the other two guests also, of almost feeling dirty in some way or having betrayed them in some way. Because,
why?
Well, because we can get out. You go there, they open up to you, they share everything with you. And yes, you're there because you want to be able to disseminate their story, because you feel that you can help in some way by showing their story. But at the end of the day, you're not part of them and you are going to leave.
Journalists are sometimes accused of, particularly those in your position, of exploiting the people that they're talking about. Do you ever wrestle with that?
Well, yes, absolutely. Because obviously, look, there is a sort of altruistic aspect to this. You are
sure
there to get the story out. And if you don't do it, it's possible at times it's not going to be done at all. On the other hand, you do have an ego. And so you want to do the best story and you want to be on the front page. And so I think it's this constant sort of struggle internally. You know, how am I exploiting these people? As opposed to, am I helping these people?
You were in South Africa, Linda, during apartheid. Mm-hmm. How would you characterize being there while that was going on and witnessing, I'm sure, some real atrocities and horrific moments?
Well, I have to say that I covered the end of apartheid, and this was a time when the government, the white minority government, was not going to go without a fight. And they had sort of created this whole subterranean structure of death squads and this sort of whole military culture structure that was actually not going to let the government go toward majority rule. And that sort of conflict is very different than the conflict that, say, Justin was talking about. That's overt conflict. That's in your face. You know where it is. In South Africa at that time, it was sort of covert, which in some ways made it even scarier because you didn't know where it was. I told Kalpana one story of, at one point, I was called to the American embassy, and the chief political officer took me for a walk around the block with the assumption that his offices were bugged. And he said to me, "I am afraid you're going to have a car accident." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "Well, you are everything that this government hates. You are writing about this military sort of semi-coup. You're writing about the death squads. You're spending all your time in the townships, and you will just have a car crash. And nobody will know the difference.
They'll just disconnect your brakes and there you'll be."
Or just have a collision. And South Africa, by the way, has one of the highest rates of collisions in the world. And I asked him, "Are you telling me this because you have specific information or just because you're generally worried?" And he said, "I can't tell you why I'm telling you this. I just have to tell you this." Well, that was absolutely terrifying, because Johannesburg, at least, is very much like Los Angeles. You can't walk anywhere. You have to drive everywhere. And after that, every time, for instance, when I would go into Soweto to do interviews, I would always go in late at night, because to talk to the people there, they all had day jobs, and the only time they could talk was after they came home from work. And I'd usually leave the township at about midnight, and there was always there was a military checkpoint, because there was a military base on the outskirts of Soweto. And they would invariably say all sorts of lewd things. What is a white woman doing leaving the township at midnight? And then you get on the highway. And the township was about 15 miles outside of sort of the white city of Johannesburg. And it's a very desolate stretch. And as soon as I would get on the highway, it was completely deserted. There would be a set of headlights behind me. And if I sped up, they would speed up. If I slowed down, they would slow down. And you don't really know how. I mean, I had no idea how to sort of protect myself against something like this. And so you just keep working.
You just keep carrying on
right.
as best you can and hope for the best.
Absolutely.
And fortunately, you're sitting with us
yes.
today, able to tell the story. Justin, you were in Egypt during covering the revolution there, the whole what was going on in Tahrir Square. Would that have been 2 years ago?
No. I actually was covering Egypt this year.
Okay.
The beginning of this year.
And there was one particular story you wanted to share with us about photographing a little boy in Egypt.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was talking with everybody about that beforehand. I was in Tahrir Square, and I was shooting the clashes that were going on, and you have to always know when to step back and step forward, like I said earlier. And,
sure.
And it was a point where the police had begun firing on us with shotguns, and I knew at that point, well, it's time to step back a little bit further. So I stepped back behind kind of the front lines and rounded a corner. And I was exhausted. We had just been tear gassed a bunch of times. They're shooting at us. So I stepped back just to kind of regroup and wait to see when, if I was going to go forward or get out. And this young boy was sitting next to me, and he kind of gestured to me to take his picture. He was a 10, 11-year-old kid smoking a cigarette. And I had no interest in the photo, but I wanted to appease the young boy. So I pulled my camera up and shot a picture. And immediately I was attacked by well over a dozen young men.
Attacked how?
They came up and they grabbed me. They started trying to grab my cameras off of me. I was swarmed.
And why were they doing that?
Well, I wasn't even sure why they were doing it at the time. An Egyptian photographer kind of came in to help me, handed me back one of my cameras, fortunately. And then, he kind of diffused the situation a little bit and said, you should leave. And two of the men drugged me out of the square and made me leave. And they explained to me that by taking a picture of this young boy smoking a cigarette, I was tarnishing the image of Egypt. And, it says something to these people, even though they're standing there in these clashes and they're throwing things at police and rocks and fighting back and forth, that the idea of tarnishing their image and their country.
Kalpana.
I just wanted to make a point over here that I saw the exact same thing, Justin, in Afghanistan when I was working with the women there, that we'd hear bombs going off outside or, the sirens and the ambulances going off. But whereas during that patch, the women were terrified and angry and frustrated and they didn't know what was happening with their families, a lot of the time their fear was things like, is my burqa on right? Is my hair, can people see my hair or my wrists, or am I properly covered? Am I in the right place? It was almost like this fear of breaking a taboo was so intense that is what sort of led them through the day. They had to be constantly vigilant that they didn't break any taboos, because if they did, about the clothes they wore, the people they talked to, the places they went to, that there was certain death in that. Whereas a bombing, it was one of those occasional things. They might or might not be killed. Whereas if they broke a taboo, they were going to be killed. So the fear of that was intense all the time.
And for someone like you, Justin, you're living with all this intensity, and then you're going from Egypt and then switching gears to covering the election of Pope Francis in
yes.
Rome. Well, what was that like?
That was a difficult transition. It was very hard to go from kind of the mass crowds and chaos of Tahrir Square into, Vatican City and be surrounded by, tens of thousands of people, but all of them there peacefully and you almost felt, it was hard for me because I felt I still had kind of the mindset of protect yourself and be ready for something, and you're around all these people, and it's hard to kind of take yourself out of the mindset of a conflict area into kind of something that's it's a lot more peaceful. But I found it to be really, really extraordinary work. And it took me a few days to settle into Rome. And once I did, I enjoyed it and loved the experience, particularly being there to be, you know, the best part of what we do is being witness. And not just witness to you know, awful things, but really beautiful things. And some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen have been in these really awful places. And, you know, having been in Rome for this occasion, and it was remarkable to witness such a historic event. And that's what I love about the camera, and that's what I love about my job and being a photojournalist.
I think that sums it up quite well. I wish we had more time. I'm sure there are many more points to be made and stories to tell, but unfortunately we have come to time for this segment. But again, there is the panel discussion next week, War Reporting, Filmmakers and Journalists on the Realities of War. It'll take place Thursday, October 24th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Carnegie Library Lecture Hall in Oakland. And our guests will all be a part of that. And again, Kalpana Biswas is a filmmaker, board chairperson of Women in Film and Media in Pittsburgh, bringing this whole thing together after she decided to make a film about women and children in Afghanistan and approaching journalists to get advice and hearing their stories and saying that realizing they would be worth sharing with the general public. And it certainly has been. Kalpana, thank you so much for being with us. Also, Pittsburgh Tribune Review photojournalist Justin Merriman for being here and sharing your stories, and Linda Schuster, former staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal and bureau chief in South Africa for the Christian Science Monitor. Thank you so much. Coming up, we'll talk about a woman who went to Brazil to make a film about that country's first woman president. That's next here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.